Our third case this morning is Gessert against the United States. Mr. Frazier.
Good morning, Your Honor. This is a federal tax case involving a closely held corporation, the Gessert Group, its owner, Robert J. Gessert, and two employment tax-related collection issues. The right to designate payments, and the second, unauthorized levy.
Could I ask you a very quick question? What pecuniary damages does the corporation, not Gessert personally, allege?
The pecuniary damages that the corporation alleges are the sums that it believed it designated to be applied to the non-trust fund portion of its obligation.
I didn't hear you.
What the corporation was trying to do was to designate payments, and
right.
was trying to designate payments to the non-trust fund portion of its liability so as to reduce the exposure of its owner and its responsible officer, Mr. Gessert.
But there's no question of fact that Gessert and the corporation didn't indicate in writing how payments should be applied, is there?
You're correct, Your Honor. There's nothing in the record to indicate a written designation. The point we make is this, that the controlling law at the time, and the controlling law still in this circuit, is the McKenzie case. It's a 1976 case permits the right to designate the payment in a non-written form.
Yeah, but that that case predates the regulation.
It's not a Treasury regulation, Your Honor, and that's the key. If it was a Treasury regulation, then that Treasury regulation would trump McKenzie, we believe, because statutes and Treasury regulations have the force of law. Revenue rulings and revenue procedures do not. The IRS put forward this written designation position as a policy position, first as a revenue ruling, and then in its latest incantation in 2002-26 as a revenue procedure.
Which specific provision of 6304B are you alleging that Johnson violated? If you could point to the specific and exact language of the statute that you think was violated.
I believe 6304B is the provision that governs fair tax collection practices. Okay? And let's take a look at the language. The language of the statute says that IRS personnel may not engage in any conduct, the natural consequence of which is to harass, oppress, or abuse a person in connection with the collection of any unpaid tax.
Yeah, but stating that the IRS will enforce collection of payment isn't received, that's not harassment. It's simply a true fact, isn't it?
We believe it. The evidence can be read to suggest a genuine issue of material fact in this case, and that's the key. The district court did not listen to the witnesses concerning what happened here. From the point of view of Mr. Gessert and Mr. Yoninas, the actors for the Gessert Group in this case, they stated in their depositions, they testified that they believe that Revenue Officer Johnson's conduct was, in fact, harassing, abusive, or oppressive. They thought she was abrupt, she was threatening, she was deceitful, she was, as we indicated, Lucy to, and this is our error, Charlie Brown with the football, continually pulling the football out from under them at the last minute. So, yeah, it's a question, and it is a question of material fact that we believe requires a trial to resolve. Maybe the most interesting and thorny question in this case is that of jurisdiction. As you can see from the case, we did not get to trial. The district court threw out all the claims on the basis of jurisdiction. We believe the district court erred in this regard. With regard to 7433, the unlawful collection action statute, the district court held that neither taxpayer, neither the corporation or Mr. Gesser could state a claim. The corporation, because it owed the money anyway. Okay, so if any claim for pecuniary damages or damages of any kind would be futile. We disagree with this conclusion. A designation of payment right is always going to be made by a taxpayer who owes the money. Okay, that's a given. What a designation of payment right does is it permits the payor, in this case the taxpayer or Mr. Gesser, the responsible officer, to direct the IRS to put a certain payment into pocket A as opposed to pocket B. Okay, it has good and sound economic reasons for making this designation. And we believe that this designation has independent economic significance that rises to direct objective economic damages under 7433. The district court also found that Gesser could not state a claim, that is, Mr. Gesser individually could not state a claim under 7433 because he wasn't the taxpayer. The district court erred in this regard because it did not consider the fact that Gesser had previously been assessed a trust fund recovery penalty, and that assessment was outstanding at the time that the alleged wrongful activity took place. Second, as the Supreme Court case in Williams points out, a complaining party does not have to have an assessment posted against him or her to have standing as a taxpayer for certain purposes. And we submit that in this kind of case, Mr. Gesser as an individual does. What's different with this case from other cases that are reported in the subject is that we have here a designation of payment attempt or an agreement, we believe, between Gessert and the revenue officer that all voluntary payments would be applied by the revenue officer to the trust fund portion of the obligation. What we have here that's different is we have a closely held corporation and its owner, Gessert, as the sole actors in this drama. And we believe that a distinction between the two with regard to designation of payments is stretching things beyond the point that they should be stretched for the purposes of distinguishing a corporation from its of its sole owner. The district court also concluded that there was no jurisdiction for Mr. Gesert under the refund and abatement statute 7422. And the district court made this conclusion on the basis that Gesert did not timely bring his administrative claim. We believe the district court erred with regard to this conclusion in jurisdiction because it applied the wrong statute of limitations. And I believe in the government's brief, the government agrees with us on this point. Gesert followed the standard procedure for invoking jurisdiction under 7422, paying in a divisible portion of the tax, claiming a refund, and the government then counterclaiming for the balance. We believe that Gesert has invoked the jurisdiction of 7422. We believe that under one of those two statutes, or both of them, the court has jurisdiction to hear these, to hear the designation of payment claim and the claim that Ms. Revenue Officer Johnson's activities were unauthorized collection action. If I can turn briefly to the Pfizer and DePue levies. These matters did not have to do with the right to designate payments. These matters had to do with whether the levy that was issued by Revenue Officer Johnson reached the property that she seized. We believe that they did not, and that this conduct was actionable by either Gessert or by the Gessert group under, again, 7433 or 7422. With the case of the Pfizer levy, the levy was issued on April 30, 2004. The levy at that point reached property rights to property belonging to the taxpayer, that is the corporation. At that point in time, the corporation only had conducted a small amount of work for Pfizer. The amount seized came many months later and was not earned, was not billed, was not earned or billed until months after the levy was issued. Yet Revenue Officer Johnson called Pfizer up and said, send me this money, in essence. Well, the levy didn't reach that money. Okay, the levy only reached what Pfizer owed the Gessert Group at the time the levy was issued. We believe that that levy was improper, that was unauthorized collection activity or illegal collection activity, and the district court had jurisdiction to hear that. The DePue levy is a little different as to in counter-distinction to the Pfizer levy. In the DePue levy, DePue sent Gessert billed DePue, the Gessert group billed DePue for an advance, which was a standard practice under its agreement with DePue. And it was that advance that Revenue Officer Johnson levied. The district court found it didn't have jurisdiction to hear that claim because this was a disguised wrongful levy action. That is, if it was our position that that property belonged to DePue, and that is our position, then DePue had a claim against the government, but nobody else, that is, Gessert or the Gessert group, did not have such a claim. That, we believe, is an error. It is true that DePue would have a wrongful levy claim if it wanted to make one. It didn't in this case because it didn't need to. The Gessert group performed the services, the levy notwithstanding. We believe, however, that the wrongful levy right that DePue has does not in any way extinguish an unauthorized collection action that might be available to Gessert or the Gessert group. With regard to, I see my time is up. I will reserve a few minutes for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, Mr. Fraser. Mr. Arroyo.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Stephen Arroyo appearing on behalf of the appellee, the United States. The district court correctly concluded that neither Gessert nor the corporation could pursue either their damages or refund claims in this action. Gessert lacks standing to pursue his damages claims under Section 7433 because none of the complained of collection actions were taken against him. It is well established that in order to have standing under Section 7433, the collection actions must be directed at the taxpayer at issue. With respect to the corporation's damages claims, it failed to state a claim under Section 7433 because it failed to identify any actual direct economic harm caused by the complained of collection activities. With respect to the refund claims, the corporation failed to state a claim under Section 7422 because it has not overpaid any of its taxes for the years at issue. It's well established that in order to seek a refund, the taxpayer must have first overpaid its tax liabilities. Finally, with respect to Mr. Gessert's refund claims, to the extent he's relying on the application of voluntary payments, it's undisputed in this case that the corporation did not include specific written instructions as is required under Revenue Procedure 2002-26 with respect to his voluntary payments. And with respect to the involuntary payments, it's undisputed that Gessert would lack standing to assert a claim under either 7426 for a wrongful levy based on those involuntary payments. If the court has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise,
Gessert And the corporation stated that the Third Circuit in Ray Kaplan has determined that both the responsible person and the corporation have standing to challenge the IRS application of payments toward non-trust fund liabilities. Is that your read of the cases?
No, Your Honor.
Well, distinguish it.
Well, Your Honor, Kaplan was a bankruptcy case, and to the extent it's raised in this case, I believe both Gessert and the corporation are relying it in the context of the corporation's damages claims. Mm-hmm. But that case did not consider the fact whether or not the taxpayer at issue in that case had actually pled actual direct economic harm under the statute, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, the government rests on its brief and asks that this court affirm the judgment of the district court.
Certainly, counsel.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Frazier? Not much to rebut.
With regard to the government's position that the Gessert Group, the corporation, did not allege pecuniary or economic damages, again, that's what a designation of payment right is all about, and that's exactly the economic damages that it frames. It has the common law right to direct that payments, a set sum of money, be put by the government into pocket A as opposed to pocket B. It is exactly that amount of money that we believe the government wrongfully failed to apply as the direct economic damages to the corporation. With regard to Gessert, it's hard to conceive how a failure of the IRS to honor a designation of payment right would not be a collection or a collection-like activity directed at Gessert. It was the designation of payment, of course, was to reduce Gessert as an individual, his exposure to the trust fund recovery penalty. That's about as direct as you can get. To the extent that the IRS would honor the designation and put the money into pocket A, that is against the trust fund portion of the obligation, that benefits and affects Gessert directly. To the effect it doesn't honor that obligation, it has the opposite effect. The Gesserts urge this court to find that jurisdiction exists, to hear their claims, and to remand this case for trial on the merits. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.